Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Never let a good crisis go to waste. Winston Churchill's famous words from the darkest days of World War II have taken on a more sinister meaning as the decades have passed. This quote was actually meant to be an inspirational message of hope to the British people, but these days, more cynical onlookers see that people with ill intent can use a crisis just as well as those who are virtuous. The Great Reset is a collective name given to a series of economic policies that are attempting to use the recovery from the coronavirus as a way to supposedly build a better, brighter, more sustainable future. This policy was first unveiled by the World Economic Forum and the United Kingdom's Prince Charles, and since its announcement, it has gathered support from a laundry list of economists, politicians, business people, and celebrities. But it has also gathered a fair bit of criticism. Just 72 hours after its announcement, a petition to stop it gained 80,000 signatures, which is kind of fair enough. The whole premise of this proposal does sound very ominous. Economic plans titled The Great Something have not exactly had the best track record. The fact that this plan is leveraging a disaster, alongside the fact that it is pushing some pretty spicy policies, means that major conspiracy theories have surfaced, ranging from this plan will make us all poorer, all the way up to this plan will make us all slaves to the lizard people. Now, in fairness, the marketing around this Great Reset has not helped its case at all. If someone was to try and research what this plan actually was, they would be presented with two extremely bizarre ads that explain absolutely nothing, and a two-hour panel which is extremely boring even to a major economics nerd like myself, and also kind of equally as unhelpful. We know this because, well, we had to research this plan to make this video, so it sounds like some economics need to be explained. And to properly do this, we're going to need to look at a few key questions. What is the Great Reset actually proposing to do? Do these ideas have any merit? Who are the players involved in pushing this agenda? And is this actually a nefarious scheme or just the victim of terrible marketing? This episode of Economics Explained was made possible by our fans on Patreon. If you would like to gain early access to these videos before they're uploaded to YouTube, as well as participate in exclusive Q&A sessions, which are now held every Saturday at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, please consider supporting our channel at patreon.com/economicsexplained. Now, perhaps one of the largest concerns shared amongst rational onlookers to this Great Reset proposal is the distinct lack of support from economists. Time magazine has created a page to help explain the idea, and it's broken the proposal down into featurettes from its key supporters. These are models, cellists, Reddit co-founders, ex-royals. But outside of Klaus Schwab, the chairman of the World Economic Forum, there are no economists. For what it's worth, Klaus Schwab is actually an engineer by education, but he is brilliant in his own right, so that one's fair enough. Now, a lot of this is because people like Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are going to attract a lot more attention than people like Paul Krugman or Thomas Piketty, something-something decline of society. But you know what? Again, that's fair enough. Plenty of brilliant ideas make it nowhere because they fail to get any attention. The second reason this page of supporters is devoid of economists is because the Great Reset has, for better or worse, become more than just an economic plan. It has become a bloated wish list of things ranging from independent media to demilitarization, support for the arts to sustainable architecture, which may very well be credible and important arguments in their own right, but only work to make this whole proposal more confusing at best or more confronting at worst. So, for the sake of simplicity, we're going to go ahead and ignore all the fluff that has been tacked on and focus purely on the economic proposals. Because, oh boy, there are still a lot of them. But the foundational point of all of this hubbub is this single point. So, if you remember just one thing from the Great Reset, make sure it is this. The Great Reset plans to ensure that every recovery stimulus, both fiscal and monetary from now on, must include green conditions. Given that 2020 has been a very rocky year and fiscal stimulus has been a major topic, we have spoken about these policies many, many times on this channel. We've explored infrastructure spending in China just last week, we looked at quantitative easing in Japan and the United States, and a host of other policies from a diverse group of nations. One common theme we saw amongst all of this is that fiscal stimulus is a great opportunity to put money towards something that needs to be improved in the nation. If a country desperately needs new highways, more funding for schooling, or you know what, even a stronger military, fiscal stimulus is a great way to provide that spending. The key objective of stimulus is to get money out into the economy and into the hands of people that can go out and spend it. That spending keeps businesses open, people employed, and quality of life improving. Now, pretty much any type of government spending will achieve this core goal. Throwing money off the tallest building in a selection of major cities will achieve this goal, but there are alternatives that achieve the same core results while also having some happy little side effects. Infrastructure spending is a great example of this. We talked about it briefly in our last video, and I don't want to repeat too much, but governments putting money towards building new pieces of infrastructure will achieve their goal of getting money out into the economy in the form of paychecks to workers, contracts to builders, and commissions to architects and engineers, but they will also have something left over to provide utility for decades to come. What this Great Reset is proposing is something similar, but channeled exclusively towards building out infrastructure for green technologies. There are a lot of advantages to installing solar panels on your home. So long as you live in a reasonably sunny area, it will reduce your energy bills to the point where the system will pay for itself a few times over. It also reduces your carbon footprint and may even add value to the property itself. However, the upfront cost is a prohibitive hurdle for a lot of households. Similar situations exist on a nationwide level. A modernised and expanded rail network in a city like Los Angeles would work to take thousands of cars off the road, reducing emissions, congestions, and lost time for commuters. But the upfront expense would probably take it out of consideration. However, if a fraction of the $2 trillion that was rolled out in the initial wave of fiscal stimulus was redirected towards a project like this, the cost would be comparatively trivial, while still achieving the desired results of putting money into people's pocket during times of economic uncertainty. Now, I'm not a city planner, so this example is exactly that, and there probably is hundreds of better ways to spend this money on renewable infrastructure. But the point is that getting that money out there while redirecting it through a project like this, or building a wind farm, or a fleet of electric buses, or whatever, is literally a win-win. Now you might be thinking, well, that sounds excellent. Even the most staunch anti-environmentalists would agree that it's probably better to get something for those government dollars than nothing at all, right? And well, yeah, it really is a great idea, but there are problems. For starters, it can be really slow to implement. It's all well and good to say we will build some amazing new wind farm that will power an entire city, but there is a lot that goes into that. Plans have to be drawn up, proposals need to be accepted, land needs to be procured, turbines need to be manufactured, and only once all of this is done can tradesmen and labourers start getting paid to put this whole plan together. This could take years, all the while people are losing jobs, going hungry, and not contributing to economic growth. Say what you will about just giving people money, but it is fast. The second issue with this kind of scheme is that money is channeled towards a group that may or may not need it as much as others. A typical project like, let's say, our wind farm will be handled through a corporation that specializes in these types of contracts. Their goal will actually be to spend as little money as possible on labor, because any money spent there is money that isn't taken as profit. And yeah, sure, that profit money will eventually find its way to shareholders or be reinvested into the company itself, but that is money that is not going to be recirculated nearly as quickly as a $1,200 check in the hands of a working class family. The final problem is what to do with the infrastructure once it's there. It could be privatised in an attempt to recoup some of the expense of building it in the first place, but then a potential vital public service is in the hands of a private company, and any benefits it provides will be locked behind a paywall of sorts, be it a toll for a highway, higher electricity costs, or a more expensive ticket to ride on a train. This is on top of the optics of privatisation, which can sometimes be a little bit politically spicy. Of course, the alternative is just to keep the project as a public asset, but then it's just another piece of infrastructure that will need to be maintained on taxpayers' dimes, which could be unpopular to the people that don't directly benefit from it. A potential solution to at least half of these problems would be to have a comprehensive list of projects pre-planned and ready to implement quickly after a downturn. complete with a plan for the project to cover its own costs or be shared equitably amongst taxpayers who will fund it. Of course, easier said than done. But if governments did have the forward vision to put some projects in the metaphorical chamber, then you know what? Nobody would have any major problem with this kind of strategy. If the Great Reset was a challenge to governments to create these kinds of plans and have them ready for the next downturn, it would probably have a slightly more favourable reception. But advocating for doing this right now is just not an achievable goal for many people, companies, and economies which are simply looking to survive through the next few months. Of course, this proposal was one of just many incorporated into the narrative of the Great Reset, and the list is comprehensive and controversial. So, let's see what else the fuss is all about. Now, these are the takeaway issues that we were able to discern from the articles published by the WEF. Again, probably one of the biggest issues with this whole proposal is that it's just really hard to tell what the proposal is. But I digress. It's time for a speed round to get through them all. One point is to push for investment into technological education so that workers around the world are better suited for employment in increasingly tech-focused industries like logistics, manufacturing, and retail. And you know what? Fair enough. That's probably a good call. Education is, of course, something that I am very passionate about, and making sure everyone has access to good, applicable knowledge is vital for maintaining a strong workforce. So long as this education is directed towards in-demand fields, this is an investment that will pay dividends many times over on an individual, national, and global level. The next proposal is to encourage long-term investments by private sector into sustainable industries. And this is a bit of a tough one. Certainly, there are huge advantages to carrying this out, but it is market intervention, so there will be critics. A carbon tax is an effective way to achieve what this point is proposing. Carbon emissions are what we call a negative externality. This is something that costs everybody in the wider economy, regardless of if they are benefiting from those emissions. Putting a tax on these emissions would mean that the external cost borne by society is also a cost borne by the emitter, and this money can either be collected as revenue to use on public goods, so at least the wider community is getting something for the medical price that they are paying, or, in the best case scenario, it will encourage businesses to invest into lower emitting alternatives to avoid this cost altogether. A large part of Tesla's revenue currently comes from selling unused allowances for emissions to companies that are less green in their operations. Now, a good group of people would support policies like this, but many wouldn't, so perhaps a more applicable takeaway might be that governments don't need to subsidise solar farms or roll out carbon taxes just yet, but perhaps they should stop subsidising major emitters. That's like paying in actual dollars to pay with intangible costs. Silly stuff, and surprisingly a widespread problem. The next proposal is to roll out a new dashboard for measuring economic success beyond just GDP metrics. And well, you know what? No problem there either. Hey, World Economic Forum, I will lend you the Economics Explained National Leaderboard. Just give me a ticket to Davos next year, yeah? In all seriousness though, no problems here. GDP has its uses, but it gets way more attention than it should. Social metrics, as well as things like an increase in collective net worth, are sometimes far more telling than GDP figures are alone. The next point is to encourage entrepreneurs to establish new technologies and environmentally ethical rules. Look, this is nice in theory, and full disclaimer, believe it or not, I am personally a big supporter of protecting the environment by living below your means, walking instead of driving, recycling, all of that good stuff. But it just isn't the role of business. It's really the role of policymakers and the responsibility of individuals. Businesses generate profit, and keeping their motivations pure and singular makes for better economies. Now, if maintaining ethical and environmental standards were baked into their profit motive, well, that's great. People love hearing about businesses that have neutral carbon footprints or treat their employees well, and those businesses get rewarded with conscientious dollars. A better solution to this would be to work on making consumers demand higher standards of corporations and encouraging competition that could challenge companies that do not meet these standards. Saying that companies should sit down and sing kumbaya with one another sounds nice in theory, but in practice, they have duty to their shareholders. You don't use a hammer to fix a laptop, so just don't use corporations to implement ethical regulation. There are just better tools for the job. Now, so far these policies have been a bit optimistic, but not exactly evil. It would probably be difficult to see how people would think this is a plan for world domination if it weren't for one final piece of the puzzle. Terrible marketing. This is a direct extract from the World Economic Forum's collaboration with Time magazine on this issue, in which the two organisations paint a picture of a future world where the Great Reset has been implemented by all governments. The year is 2023. The COVID-19 pandemic has come to an end and the global economy is on a path to recovery. How did we get here? The US began to change its approach after November 3rd, 2020, when Joe Biden defeated Donald Trump in the presidential election and the Democrats held the majority in both houses of Congress. Following his inauguration in January 2021, Biden moved quickly to rebuild frayed ties between America and Europe, setting up a forum to share collective intelligence that could inform a smarter form of government. European governments were eager to learn from investment strategies used by the US government, like those led by defense research agency DARPA to spur research and development into high-risk technologies. The European leadership used challenge-oriented policies to create 100 carbon-neutral cities across the continent. Governments used a digital revolution to improve public services, from digital health to e-cards, and create a citizen-centered welfare state. Holy partisanship, Batman. The article continues on like this, and I will leave a link in the video description for those who want to read it in full. Now, you may personally support everything that has been said here, and that's great, but you have to realise how blatantly partisan it is. It also pushes globalist ideas and advocating for nations to openly share their intellectual property. Now, this in reality is what people are taking issue with. The World Economic Forum sounds like it should be, well, a forum, and one that positions itself above agendas like this one. But of course, it isn't. And understanding what the World Economic Forum actually is will teach us a lot about what this whole proposal is in reality, and why even the most staunch rivals to its policies shouldn't be overly afraid of it. The World Economic Forum is a non-government organisation, probably best known for their annual meetings held in Davos, Switzerland, where thousands of wealthy people descend on a small alpine village to talk about all things economics. It makes a majority of its money through membership fees, which are steep. They range anywhere from $67,000 a year to $700,000 per year, depending on the level of engagement with the organisation. So, who are these members? Well, obviously, very rich people, or influential public figures that get complimentary invites. So, by virtue of the fact that it attracts the type of people who can afford this membership, it is influential, but it's not like the United Nations or the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank, as much as it would like you to believe that it is. It's, for lack of a better way of putting it, a book club for woke billionaires, where the only thing that they discuss are economics textbooks. The Great Reset may as well be the Great Gatsby. It's not really a genuine proposal, it's a hypothetical to stir up conversation and maybe a little bit of controversy. That's how they get attention, which is how they get membership, which is how they maintain influence and relevance. And now, since I have totally destroyed my chances of ever being invited to Davos as a guest speaker to bring this message to you all, go and support the channel on Patreon. It might not make up for those sweet, sweet guest speaker dollary dues, but you will be continuing to make these videos possible, just like these awesome people did. So thanks, guys. Bye.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.